Informational hearing on potential solution to self-insurance dilemma that we have. We had a hearing last Wednesday on the 19th, and today we've got Jay and Rob. You want to come up? Jay and Rob, why don't you guys both come up and start this off and continue our discussion.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Rob Douglas, representing the Oregon Self-Insurers Association. With me today is Jay Beninoff. During your hearing last week, you heard Oregon employers talk about the dilemma they're in with regard to obtaining excess insurance. There was some passing remarks about Minnesota and the system that they use in that state, and we've brought Jay out today to describe that system to you.
Okay, well, welcome, Jay, to Oregon. You said you just left some cold weather back in Minnesota.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Jay Beninoff, and yes, I did leave cold weather. It was 30 below zero, so I appreciate the opportunity to escape from that. Plus,
summer resort weather.
But your stay is beautiful. I've actually been here a number of times recently. I have an 18-year-old senior in high school who's applied to a couple of your colleges out here, Willamette and Lewis and Clark. And his mother doesn't want him to come here because she's afraid that he'll fall in love with it and never come back to Minnesota. So, but I can understand why people do fall in love with it. So thank you very much. And maybe if I'm here for a month, the weather will warm up in Minnesota. But thank you very much. What I'm here today to talk about is Minnesota and how Minnesota handled a situation I think that you're facing today here in Oregon on your Workers' Comp Free Insurance Association. And the success that we have had in Minnesota, and I think the model is one that would fit well here in Oregon. By way of background, you can see on the screen, I've had a variety of jobs in my life. I say I've got a checkered career. I am a lawyer, though I try not to say that too loudly. I was the legal counsel for the Minnesota Senate for a number of years, 1976 to 1981. I was 10 when I started there. I'm the former commissioner of the State Department of Labor and Industry in Minnesota. That's the department that regulates workers' compensation. And I am also the former president and CEO of what I will talk about today. The long name is Workers' Compensation Reinsurance Association, sometimes referred to as WCRA, and most often by legislators referred to as WICRA. So that's how we refer to ourselves. And I have a similar position to you folks, not quite as elevated, but I am also on the St. Paul City Council. I'm a council member in the city of St. Paul. So a little bit of my background. In 1979, Minnesota self-insured employers in particular faced what we consider as a crisis. They were not able to buy reinsurance. The market had dried up, and if they could, it was very expensive. The WCRA came about as a result of that, and we like to think that the WCRA has been meeting the reinsurance needs of Minnesota employers and employees since 1979. I want to emphasize employers and employees because this definitely benefits employers. It definitely benefits the state, and I'll explain to you how. But also benefits employees for all sorts of reasons. In 1979, a Work Comp Study Commission in Minnesota concluded that a reinsurance fund would alleviate the shortage of commercial reinsurance and reduce the burden on insurers and self-insured employers of long-term escalating claim liabilities. Its expenses might be less, and investment income will also reduce costs to employers. Now, that was in theory. The question is, how in fact did it work? Truthfully, we took somewhat of a leap of faith in 1979, but in Minnesota we felt we had no choice, given the fact that we had, I think you've heard of some of these companies, 3M, Cargill, Target Corporation, all those who were saying we need some relief. In addition, many of the small self-insured employers were faced with a situation where, since they couldn't purchase reinsurance at a reasonable cost, they were going to have to buy insurance, give up their self-insurance status. And for all sorts of reasons, they didn't want to. They felt self-insurance for them was more appropriate. So what did Minnesota do? On June 9th, 1979, the legislation was passed. It was passed by a Democratic legislature. Actually, that's not true. It was a Democratic Senate, a Republican House, and a Republican governor. So it was clearly a joint effort. In addition, self-insured employers were, as I indicated, behind it. Employers were behind it. And smaller insurance companies in Minnesota, what we call the regional insurance companies. It began operation October 1st, 1979. Pretty quick turnaround, 3 months. Again, the crisis was such that we believe that we simply couldn't wait. No state or other taxpayer financing went into this organization to start it up. Not a state, not a penny of state dollars. It was the initial premiums were used for startup costs. There was some analysis of what premiums would be, and a certain percentage of that, a small percentage of that, was charged immediately to members. And frankly, it didn't take a whole lot of money to start up. No state money has ever been used for this entity. None. It was established as a not-for-profit organization. Essentially what that means is if it makes money, it goes back to policyholders. You can think of it as a co-op or a mutual insurance company. The policyholders are the owners. The policyholders benefit. It's also tax-exempt, both on the state and federal level. If you look at the federal code 501c27, WCRA, not by name but by substance is mentioned. So it is a tax-exempt entity. We do not, or it does not pay federal or state income taxes, which benefits employers. Obviously, the tax liability is reduced. You can, for all sorts of reasons, that's passed along to employers and insurance companies. Everyone in the state has to belong. It's mandatory. What I mean by mandatory, all self-insured employers, both private and public, which includes the state of Minnesota itself, which includes the city of St. Paul, School Board Association, Minnesota League of Minnesota League of Insurance Trust, all insurance companies in the state, including our state fund, Liberty Mutual, everybody, no choice. Some highlights. Since 1979, premiums collected have been just over $1 billion. Because of its nonprofit status, the profit that has been generated has been returned to policyholders, which essentially is insurance companies, self-insured employers, and employers. Now, it's a little difficult to explain in a few minutes here, and I won't try to, but employers also receive checks back and have, even though they are not directly policyholders of the organization, it's through their insurance companies. Claims paid, so the surplus has been $1.23 billion. So you can see more money has been returned in dividends, and that's, think of that as profit, to policyholders, $1.23 billion. Claims paid has been approximately $360 million. So the total surplus in claims paid is $1.59 billion in 24 years. Currently, it's funded, fully funded to pay future claims, is $920 million in the bank. And that's $3.1 billion undiscounted. So with that $1 billion, the WCRA or WICRA has been able to generate profit, pay claims, and fully fund its future liabilities.
Okay, question.
Yes.
So that the $3.1 billion discounted, so that's for the long tail.
That's exactly right. Okay. The $900 and some million, it's obviously set aside, invested, and based on these investment return assumptions, that will grow to $3.3 billion. That's correct.
Well,
Senator Walker.
Yes, thank you. But your investments, where do you put your money for your investments? The same place everybody else is putting it?
Yeah.
In the stock
pretty much.
Market?
Stock market, fixed income, pretty much the same. We have an investment policy that is approved by the state. One of the members of the board is the director of the State Board of Investment of Minnesota. So we invest in, I think, in many of the same ways that a commercial reinsurer or insurance company would.
And a follow-up to that then is, have you seen your investments go down, and has your fund been impacted by the recession and 9/11?
Absolutely. I mean, I wish I could say that. By the way, I left the WCRA just before the investments went in the tank, but the answer to your question is yes, obviously, and I'll get to that slide in a second. We've seen investments go down as well. There's no question about that. Just like anyone. I mean, I've seen it in my own portfolio. I'm sure you've seen it in your portfolio. Insurers have seen it. Absolutely. We sort of suffer the same fate, good and bad, as anybody else does.
But you're about to tell us how you survived the storm.
Sure.
Okay. I'll sit back and watch the movie.
Thank you. Just here's a chart, a graphic of the WCIR rates since inception. You can see since 1992, rates have been pretty stable. They went down significantly. This chart lays out the three retention limits that is currently provided by the organization. At the bottom line, the purple line, you can see it now, whatever color it is with the triangles, is what we call the super retention. That's a retention limit of about $1.4 million currently. And these retention limits, by the way, change with inflation, but it's the super one. That was added in 1996. You can see the rate has been pretty steady since its inception. The middle line is the high, what we call the high, which is currently about $750,000 or $60,000. Again, rates have been pretty stable. And the lower retention, which is the top line, obviously the most expensive. Again, you can see rates have been stable. Now, let me point out, you see there was this in the middle here, the rates were relatively high. The WCIR was operated by General Reinsurance, which is a large American reinsurance, from 1979 to about 1989. And for a variety of reasons, the board made the decision not to renew the contract and took it in-house. One of the things that happened was we discovered that the rates had been set by General Re based on national experience. Minnesota always believed it was a little better, and I'm sure Oregon believes it's better than the national. And we began using Minnesota-only experience for workers' comp and workers' comp reinsurance. What we discovered here, as you can see dramatically, is that we were better. In fact, so rates did drop. So the WCIR had the opportunity to look at what's happening in Minnesota, not what's happening in New York or California or anywhere else. So that I think, explains some of it, some of the change from the 80s into the 90s.
Mr. Chair.
Yes.
Thank you.
Do you happen to have, or could you give us another line on there that would be private insurance rates compared to this?
Yeah, I could, actually. You should have some material. It looks something like there's a lot of numbers on here. I'm sorry. But if you go to the middle of that, there is a document that says a comparison of prices between Workers' Comp Reinsurance Association and the hypothetical competitive market. It looks like this, and it's by Milliman and Robertson. It's about halfway into your information. I'll get to that too. So let me refer to it now. It's on one of my slides. But if you look on page 3, this is excerpts, not the whole report. If you look on page 3, it looks like this. Okay? There's a little box here that says table 2, price comparison. What this essentially says is it compared Minnesota rates to what the premiums would be in the private sector. And depending on who you were, whether you're a large insurer, a small insurer, a large self-insurer, or a small self-insurer, if you read this, what you'll notice is that in all cases, the WCRA price was significantly lower than it would be in the private sector. Now, let me point out, this talks about the gross premiums. This does not take into account the surplus that I talked about, the $1.23 billion. If you look a couple pages beyond, on page 7 of that report, Milliman Robertson report, it has one paragraph on it. It says, the total cost of the WCRA's coverage after consideration of refunds and credits is close to zero. Actually, it is less than zero now. This was done in 98. The last distribution for the WCRA was made in 2000. So it was another $300 million. So this was done before the last distribution. It goes on to say, this net cost would never be matched by a commercial market. Essentially, the employers, insurers, have gotten complete reinsurance coverage at no cost. I know this sounds like a Ponzi scheme. I really need to emphasize it is not. This is, we have real live people on our board. We have a commissioner of finance for the state of Minnesota. We have insurance company members. This is not a Ponzi scheme. This does work. So what you see here, again, this is before the last distribution. Milliman & Robertson, who was hired to make a fair analysis, has indicated that it was, the commercial market would be more expensive. Let me also, and I think I can share this information. We did analysis for the Schnitzer Group on what their rates in the WCIR would be if they were to reinsure with us. Presuming Minnesota and Oregon have similar kinds of work comp experience, it's not perfect. And based on their payroll, throughout three states. Let me go back. They currently pay about $600,000 for their reinsurance, and their retention limit is $500,000. Okay, they're paying $600,000 for $500,000 retention. The WCRA today would be charging the Schnitzer Group, if they were at the low retention, which has a $350,000 retention limit, Schnitzer Group would be paying at the low retention $86,000 versus $600,000 they're paying, and they get more coverage. If they're at the high retention limit, which is the $720,000, they would be paying for WCRA $42,000 versus their current $600,000. If they were at the super, which is the $1.4 million limit, they would be paying $20,000 versus their $600,000 today. This is after experience modification, since we do experience modify. So there's lots of history and studies and real life, which I'll also get to, indicating that the rates have been significantly lower. The bottom line is I've yet to see a commercial reinsurer not only charge as low rates, but return at all. I know from my own personal situation, I've never had my homeowners or auto insurer come to me and say, here's a check for all the premiums you've paid for the last 20 years, and we're going to give you an additional 30%. And by the way, don't worry, we still have you covered. It just doesn't happen. Maybe it has happened to you, but it's never happened to me. So what we're seeing here is, because of the nonprofit status and a variety of other things, the WCR has been able to provide the kind of coverage that Minnesota employers have asked for. Investment returns. This is Senator Walker. This is what you, I think, asked for. From 1979 to 2001, the return on investment annualized was 12.7%. Now, the WCRA prices its product assuming a 6 or 7, at one point it was a 7% rate of return. Anything over that is profit. Well, since we're not for profit, it goes back to the member companies. That's where part of the $1.23 billion came from. The high was 1995. I know those days are long gone. Who would have ever thought 28.57%? That was great. Now, let me point out, I'm not privy to commercial reinsurance market, but presumably they were making the same kind of returns. Where they went, I don't know. I guess it's up to the reinsurers to explain what happened to all that money, to the profit. We know what happened to it in Minnesota. It stays in the system. It goes back to those who paid it. The low, this is 2001, was a negative 4.74% rate of return. Now, reinsurance, even if we got another bad year or 2 years of bad investment returns, the tail on workers' comp is so long that, you know, we feel in Minnesota we can ride out the market. We can ride up the lows and the highs, because it's not like you have to pay it right away. The tails on work comp is very long, so it gives you the ability to smooth out those highs and those lows. Here's a bar graph of rate of return since 1990. You can see, you know, it's obviously some good years and some not so good years. I'd like to say we were geniuses when we were making 28%, but you know, I guess it really wasn't that hard in those years to make 28%. But I think the genius is being able to deal with some of the bad years. The last distribution was in 2000. This was $310 million. So of the $1.23 billion, $310 million was distributed in 2000. Here's the breakup. Self-insurers received $62.6 million. Employers received $42.2 million. Insurers received $202 million. That's how it broke up.
Sure. Thank you, Mr. Chair. On that, what is the formula for distribution?
Well, I'd have to have an actuary here to explain that. There is a formula. There's a complicated formula. The self-insurers
based
get
on premium. Is it expended or?
Yeah, the self-insurers are easy to figure out. It's a percentage of their work comp coverage. I can't remember the mathematical formula. They're actually kind of easy to figure out. You take the $310 million, figure out what each self-insured portion of that is, and and return it to them. So it gets a little more complicated with employers and insurers because you'll see here employers receive money, but they don't actually pay the WCRA directly. Their insurers do, but there's a complicated formula that actually returns some of it directly to them as well. In fact, I had my state representative employs a person to care for his children at his house, and he received a $10 check back. Now, it's not a lot, but he only won, you know, and so he thanked me for it. He came up and thanked, but it's not a lot. But for some employers, it was $1,000, $2,000, $10,000. It's a little hard to explain to employers why they're getting this money because most of them don't know who we are. So you try to explain in a letter, but it gets a little confusing. So there is an actuarial formula that's used to make this determination.
But in that formula, if I can follow up, Mr. Chair, just to clarify, but that formula is based on a what the actuary working on is a equitably based distribution. In other words, it's not a pick and choose.
No, absolutely not.
Distribution.
No, it's very.
So the state and all these other ones who have to be reinsured. Everybody.
Absolutely. Everyone gets their proportionate, roughly their proportionate share, Senator. Everyone, Mr. Senator. Everyone gets essentially their proportionate share of some sort, right?
There was no distribution in 2001.
There has not been since 2000. The first distribution, Mr. Chair, was made in 1992. So it was 13 or 14 years after the establishment of the WCRA. It wasn't 2 years later that we decided God, we have all this money. I mean, there wasn't enough experience. It took a long time before these reserves, these surpluses built up. So there was one in 90, well, there have been four total. This was the last one. One thing I didn't point out in the previous chart where you saw the rates, 1 year in 97, I believe, in 98, 97, instead of returning money, what the WCRA did was credit you on your reinsurance premium. So the super retention limit was free. Anyone who has a super retention limit got coverage for nothing. And then we made the appropriate credit for the other retention limits. So we started calling it out ourselves free re, because if you were at the super, you got covered and didn't have to pay us your premium, rather than returning the checks. What we discovered was, actually, members like checks better than credits. They like to, it's true. They like to go into their, you know, whoever got the check liked to go into the CEO and say, look at this check we just got for $10,000. So it was a good try. They got credit, but they like to see the money. So the 2000 distribution was made through checks to employers.
So did you have to go into your reserve to cover?
No.
This year, or how did that work? If you,
Mr. Chair, no, don't. Again, the payments, claim payments, continue to be made. There's not over $900 million in the bank, so to speak. It's not in the bank, but it's someplace that continues to. It's funded. All claims are fully funded. So there's plenty of money right now, and there's still a surplus that exists within the WCRA. So no, we didn't have to go into the till, so to speak.
Okay. Further questions? Please proceed. Thank you.
Just quickly about operations. It's not a big staff. 23 staff members is all we have. When I got there in 1987, January had 37. We pared it down to 23. Technology has certainly made that in large part possible, so it's not a large staff. Its budget is $3.45 million. That is an increase of 1.65 annualized since 1991. So there's been some increases, but pretty modest, not even keeping up with the rate of inflation. You can see expenses is, and this is in the Milliman and Robertson report as well, is 0.25% of premium versus 1 to 2.5 for commercial reinsurance.
Does that include the tax exempt situation? I mean, do you include that in your expenses or not?
The taxes. No, we don't have taxes, so it's not.
That's
no.
What I'm saying. Your expenses are less than the commercial reinsurance would be paying tax.
No taxes. They
pay. Would this be less, or is this be included in this figure?
I think it's included in this figure. Let me go back and check, but I think
okay.
It's the chair. This is the chart I referred to earlier. Let me just quickly refer to one or two things here. This is the Milliman and Robertson report. And again, I want to point out this was done at a time where the commercial market was available or would have been available in Minnesota. Reinsurers were selling at somewhat reasonable costs. But if you look, let's go down a couple here. Let's go to large self-insurance down. It's the third category. It says large self-insurer. The WCRA price, you can see across the different retention limits, for this self-insurer would have been $150,000 for the low, $70,000 for the high, and $33,000 for the super. Based on a couple of different assumptions, Miller and Robertson indicated For the low, this large self-insurer would pay anywhere from $277,000 to $350,000, and then you can see the other indicators as well. Make that same comparison for small self-insurers and then large and small insurers as well. So this is Milliman and Robertson's analysis. I referred to this earlier. The conclusion for the Milliman Robertson report was the total cost of the W-Series coverage after consideration of refunds and credits is close to zero. I would amend that today to say it is less than zero. This net cost would never be matched by a commercial market. I would ask the commercial market if they made money in the 90s, why it wasn't returned to policyholders and what happened to it. Now, obviously, they operate in a different level. They're not nonprofit. They pay taxes, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And in Minnesota, there certainly has been some efforts over the last 20 years to abolish the WCRA, mostly coming from the Reinsurance Association of America. Let me tell you, the Minnesota legislature has been both Republican and Democrat. We've had Republican and Democratic governors, and it has never gotten to step one, simply because employers, self-insured employers, think this is good for Minnesota. We sometimes hear the argument that the playing field isn't level. We are tax exempt; they are not. We don't really care if it benefits Minnesota employers. We don't really care if we're tax exempt. Good for us that we're tax exempt. Our goal is to keep the cost of reinsurance down, to allow the money that would otherwise go to reinsurance to be reinvested in jobs in Minnesota. And, of course, with the surplus that you've seen return, again, that is reinvested in Minnesota. The benefits to Oregon or Minnesota, you could put any state in there, is, number one, reinsurance is available. It's stable. And it's affordable. You saw that from the charts. Control is in Oregon rather than nationally. Again, the way we've set it up in Minnesota, the board of directors is comprised of the different interests in the WCRA. There are four insurance company members, two self-insured members, two employer members, two employee or labor members, a public member, and two state officials. They care about Minnesota. They care about Minnesota employers as you do about Oregon employers, and that's their primary motive. Oregon experience only. I referred to that before. If you feel you're better than California or you feel you're better than Florida, why include their experience in your rate making? The dollars stay in Oregon and support the work comp system and the economy in general. I would venture to guess if some of these distributions had been made to Oregon employers, they would have kept it here. They would have perhaps, hopefully, expanded their jobs. The money would stay here rather than go to wherever it goes otherwise. Let me quickly, I know I'm running out of time here, but I just want to show you some real-life examples. If you look back at the information that looks like this, a lot of numbers. I used to joke with my actuary, say the goal of the actuary is to get as many numbers on a page as possible. And this is, I've actually seen more than this, but let me quickly run through and explain what this is. These are real. These are actual. First one you should have, it says on top, member, state of Minnesota. This is the state of Minnesota's reinsurance premiums. If you look in the middle column where it says premium, can you all see that? You go down to the bottom, and it's under distributions, well, just above distributions and premium credits, there's a figure of $15.5 million. That's the premium that's been paid by the state itself since 1984. Let me point out, the state didn't become a member until 84 because originally all government entities were exempt. They came to us, the local entities came to WCRA in 1982 and said, please, please let us in. So we did. The statute was amended. In 84, the state said, we would like to be a member too. And, you know, since it's a state, I guess we said, all right, well, whatever you want. So that, this is since 84. So their total premium since 84 was $15.5 million. They have received profit, surplus, distribution, whatever you want to call it, of $21.5 million. So it's about $6 million more than they've actually paid. Go over a couple of columns and you'll see it says reimbursements in the funded layer. That's claims paid by the WCRA, about $239,000. If you look over one column, it says WCRA funded case reserves. That's the reserves the WCRA has to pay future claims that have occurred but that haven't yet reached our retention limit of $35 million. So basically, what you do is if you add up the $21 million plus the claims paid, you'll see that they've received significantly more than they actually paid the WCIRE over time. Okay? The next page is the City of St. Paul, and since I'm a councilman.
Going back to that first page, in 92, there was a 1.3 premium. That dropped down to almost 900,000, and then in 95 you had another, or 96 you had another huge drop.
Mr. Chair, they probably switched retention limits. It looks like they went from the state must have gone from the high retention limit, or they may have gone from the high to the super. So that's what happened. Is that you can see they changed retention limits.
Was that the Mr. Chair?
Yes, go right ahead.
Was that the time period that you switched? Insurance carriers or
no that was actually Mr. Chair, Senator Walker, that was the time where the super retention was offered for the first time. The entity that operated WCRA left in 1989.
Perfect.
But they switched retention limits is what happened in Minnesota. The state itself did, and when I say the state insures its state employees, and that's who this is. City of St. Paul, I'm a little embarrassed about this one. I'll tell you why in a minute. Since 82, you see they became a member in 82. The City of St. Paul has paid $4.8 million in premium, received $5.6 million in distributions. Go over a couple columns, $3.5 million in claims. I suspect there was some, with police officers and other highly hazardous positions. Actually, we had a couple of police officers killed in 1993. But you'll see $3.5 million. So if you add the $3.5 million to the $5.6 million that was returned, you're talking, over $9 million paid on premiums of $4.8 million. Okay? And I won't go through the rest, but you can see the same for the Minnesota School Board Association, League of Minnesota Cities. The one I do want to point out is here's a small self-insurer a couple pages back. I can't tell you who it is because other than public entities, which is public information, I can't tell you who the private entities are. So you have to believe me on this one. This is a small self-insurer. It's been a member since 79. It's paid $1.5 million in premiums, received $2.1 million in distributions. It's only $11,000 in claims, but there's a $351,000 reserve. They received $2.1 million in distribution. Frankly, what you find is a lot of these folks who were required to reinsure will never have a claim. Just don't have a claim. And this program reinsures them, but also returns it to them in some fashion. So this is what happened here. And the next page is a large national self-insurer, similar situation. Again, you could read the numbers yourself, but you'll see much of it is returned. I do want to point to one insurance company. It says regional insurer off on top, and actually I can tell you who that is. That's our state fund, which was established in 1984. This is one, just to show you that not everyone has actually received more in surplus than they've paid. Here's an example of one that has not. Paid $62.6 million in premiums, received $53.5 million in distributions. So it actually received less, but go over a couple of columns. Reimbursements in the funded layer, $21.2 million in claims paid by the WCRA. So if you add the $21 million to the $53 received, again, you got a situation where they've received more dollars in some fashion than they've paid. And there's $160 million in reserves for their claims. So I'm not going to tell you that every member has gotten more back in distribution. And that's for a variety of actuarial reasons, which I'm sure I would completely lose myself in if I tried to explain. One final one is the last one that says large insurance. It says large national insurer. Here's one, $77 million paid in premiums, $113 million returned in distributions, $113 million. This is a big insurance company. $31 million in claims paid and $254 million in funded reserves. We believe, and I think if you check with employers, we got a call today. I just got a call today from Boise Cascade, which is large self-insured in Minnesota, and I think it is here too. Will tell you that this is wonderful for most self-insureds. there are a couple, and I'm not going to lie to you, there are probably a couple self-insureds who are so large that they could probably go out and sort of dictate their price on the commercial market that would tell you this is not as good a deal for them. But yet, they're still in the state. It's not like we have not seen anyone flee the state. There's the question of carve-out, because you do have to carve out Minnesota. If you're doing business in Minnesota, if you're 3M, if you're Target, you have to buy your reinsurance. I don't think that has driven them out of the state. The benefit to them is so great in Minnesota that it seems to be worth their while to carve it out. The Milliman report also touches on that, and it's on page 10 of the report under what says bundling of coverage. I'll read one line. It says, our survey of reinsurers indicated that the potential of such bundling, which would include covering in all states, would likely be relatively small. So we believe this is good for Minnesota employers. It could certainly work in a very similar fashion in Oregon. Clearly, the details might be slightly different, but I think it could be made to work in Oregon. And I think the bottom line is, you as state senators are obviously interested in providing the kind of business environment that employers continue to grow in and perhaps move here to. And if they can reduce their work comp premiums from $500,000 or $600,000 to even $100,000, that's $400,000 more they have to invest in Oregon and an expansion of jobs and opportunities in Oregon.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. That is an important point. Did you see, as a result of your change the system, an increase in investment, business investment, economic and job growth? Of course, you started back in 1979, and things were pretty good. Then they got, I don't know if Minnesota went through a bad time in the 80s like
sure,
we did.
Sure.
And then the 90s just boomed. But did you see a significant change in growth, business growth?
Mr. Chair, Senator Walker, yes, we did, I think. And, it's obviously the reasons businesses boom or don't boom is very complicated. It has to do with all sorts of factors, economic factors. But workers' comp is certainly among them. And the 80s was certainly not a good year in many respects, but what the WCRA was able to provide was a certainty and sort of the knowledge that reinsurance would be available at a reasonable cost, so that employers could sort of plan that part of their business. Would I sit here and tell you it is what has saved Minnesota employers? Of course not. There's lots of reasons, tax policy, et cetera. But I did have a letter. It's sort of dated now, and but I think it's still important. I didn't bring it with me. We got a letter from Honeywell. This is when Honeywell was still like really big in Minnesota. This no longer exists for all practical purposes. And the CEO at the time, Bonsignori, wrote a letter saying that one of the major reasons Honeywell has remained in Minnesota is because of the WCRA, because it allowed them to plan in a thoughtful approach to what their reinsurance would be and not be surprised. So, yeah, I think it has definitely made a difference. There's a couple of letters, Senator, Mr. Chair, in your information that you just look at, but I think it's informative. There are three letters I've got. One is from the former Commissioner of Finance and Commissioner of Employee Relations of the state of Minnesota, telling you what he believed is the benefits of the WCRA. One is from a labor Teamster member, indicating his position, which is favorable. But probably the most interesting one is from Lawrence Cole Morrison and Charpentier. Mr. Cole was on the study commission that recommended the WCRA, and he voted against it, and for all sorts of reasons. Well, if you look at the letter, he says that he made a mistake, and he represents employers throughout the state of Minnesota. He indicated that it is, how often do you get a lawyer to admit he made a mistake, So this is pretty, we should frame this one. So he said, I voted against the proposal at the time. However, in my view of the operations of the Workers' Compensation Reinsurance Association, I strongly believe in its viability as well as its benefit to insurers, self-insureds, employers, and employees. So I think really the proof is in the pudding. You're going to hear all sorts of theoretical reasons that this doesn't work. I would suggest that you ignore those theoretical reasons and look at what has actually transpired in Minnesota. is a perfect system? No. I have not yet seen a insurance mechanism that is a perfect system. But I think it's far better for Minnesota, and I think it would be far better for Oregon employers to have the certainty, to have the availability, and potentially, now I can't guarantee that $1.23 billion will be returned to Oregon employees, and excuse me, employers, but potentially that would happen if the profit is made, as it is made. It's made in the commercial market at times. It stays here. You as legislators would have oversight. You as legislators would be able to understand, for example, why, what's happening in the market. So, I think that gives you greater control, and it gives employers greater control. So, with that, I thank you very much for your time.
Thank you very much. Yeah, just you started your first slide. You're talking about you started up this thing with initial premiums, right. The startup question, and I'm thinking, and I was looking at these reimbursement rates. The only one I saw was a large national self-employer that went back to 1979, and it started out at about a 1.85, then in the second year went up to 8% on a rate. But then I looked at the other ones, and they're all different rates all over the board, depending upon the class, I guess.
Yeah.
But I was thinking, how would you envision a state starting up at this particular time? And not using any state money and just using premium money?
Mr. Chair, it's a good question. Let me explain. When it says reimbursements in the funded layer, what that is, it doesn't mean that was the year it was paid in. What it means is those are the dollars attributable to injuries occurring that year. So because the retention limits are, this is reinsurance, an injury that occurred in 1979 might not actually get paid until 5, 10. It took 4 years for the WCRA to pay its first claim. Now, it was a 1979 claim. But so what happens, frankly, is it has the opportunity to collect initial premiums, begin operation. It doesn't take much to begin. The WCRA actually started in a loaned office of the St. Paul companies. They said, here's an office, do what you have to do. They sort of donated it, and we collected some very small initial premiums because you have the opportunity to collect the premiums before the first claim really is paid. So while you might see payments made in 1979, they're actually not made in 79. They were made for claims occurring in 1979.
No, I was thinking the premium payments more than...
The premium, Mr. Chair, is obviously based on, depending on the retention limits someone was at.
Just look at this large national insurance company. The first year premium was $25,000. The second year was $130,000.
Oh, I see, yeah.
I mean, we're in, that's what the situation we're in now is that there's this huge premium increase.
Mr. Chair, the reason is, if you recall, we started October 1st, 1979. It was a partial year. It was a partial year premium. And, frankly, I wish I could tell you we had it perfect. We were making some really wild guesses as to what premiums would be. So those are all later adjusted, of course, based on what real life is. But 1979, the premium was small, and you could easily start it with just collecting from Oregon insurers and self-insured employers some percentage of what the premium would be. I mean, it doesn't take a whole lot of money to start this entity up. Frankly, you could start it up with a couple people. There are systems out there now. I mean, this was 1979. Technology was not nearly what it is today. I know the systems that would operate this. It would be much simpler, much quicker, much faster. You could do it simply by charging some initial premium to all members of. We've taken it to call it ORCA, by the way. It sounds ORCA would be Oregon Reinsurance Compensation Association. It sounds, has a nice fit to it. It doesn't take much money to start this up. And again, the staff of the WCRA today, in its maturity, is 23 people. It's not a lot of money. I mean, you don't need a lot. That's the premium of a little tiny member that covers those operations.
If you weren't able to cover your the caseload on it, you guys have a reassessment, or can you assess your members more money, or how does that work?
Mr. Chair, yes, there is a authority in law to allow assessments if we have a shortfall. It's never happened, but yes, there are. But let me explain, that's not as bad as it sounds, because frankly, you're spreading it around among, I don't know how many employers and insurers and self-insurers you have here in Oregon, but thousands of entities. So the cost would be pretty minimal. That's no different than a commercial reinsurer. If they suffered some catastrophic loss, what would happen would be the next year, your rates would go like... would go way up if you could get it at all. I mean, they're going to recover this in some way. Nobody I know, no company, commercial or otherwise, would not recover its losses. You have to. The benefit of this model is that the folks who are most impacted, those that are paying the bills, are running it. And it gives them an opportunity to understand what's happening. It also, frankly, gives them an opportunity, if there is something wrong with the system in Oregon, they can fix it because they understand. I mean, it's amazing to me how knowledgeable our board members have become. And that goes every, you know, the president of the AFL-CIO in Minnesota is like a work comp expert. It's remarkable, and it helps the whole system. I mean, these are the protagonists in the work comp debate at the legislature, but this has helped them understand work comp in a way they never have before. Let me also point out that one of the unwritten rules of the WCRA is never, ever to take a position on what the benefits ought to be. It's not our job. The board understands that. They can certainly go out and lobby as individuals for their entities, but the WCRA has never taken a position on what benefits ought to be, what the law ought to be. It's simply a reinsurer, and it's the board members understand that. And it gives them an opportunity to really talk about issues in a way that they sometimes don't. So there's sort of side benefits as well. One or two other quick things, and I'll shut up. I can go on and on and on. I really believe in this, Mr. Chair. I think this really works. The WCRA is the expert in treating and dealing with catastrophic injuries. We know the best place that individuals should go to if they have a burn injury, if they have a brain injury, if they have a back injury, because we handle all of them. You often, in a normal situation, if you have an insurer or a self-insurer that has maybe one a year or every 10 years, it's difficult for them to really understand the best treatment. We see them all the time, unfortunately. So we really do understand. In fact, we give seminars on a regular basis to our members indicating how to deal with burns, brain injuries, back injuries, quadriplegic, paraplegic. So there is a benefit there as well. And we work with our members to handle their claims. The member continues to handle it. We never actually handle it. They handle it. But we work with them to reduce their claim costs. So there's lots of other benefits that I haven't even talked about other than financial.
Yes, Senator Walker.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm reading your letter here from Minnesota Drive, because that was what was coming up in my mind. Well, great, you know, premiums are low, you're sending money back, but how are the workers treated, and how do the workers feel about the program? This letter says they feel great about it, but this is only one letter. So can you just give me a little, all of us a little synopsis, sure, about how the workers feel about the program?
Mr. Chair, Senator Walker, you're right, that's one letter. I could easily have brought a letter from the president of the state AFL-CIO, which is the largest, obviously, union, who would tout the benefits of WCRA for employees. They understand that unfortunately some employees get injured, severely injured, and they, I believe, appreciate the WCRA's role in dealing and with that employee, perhaps getting him back. You know, even if you don't get him back to work because they're 95% burned, at least dealing with the medical situation, getting that employee back to some stability, because we do work with our members. Again, we don't handle the claims ourselves. We do work with the members. We do try to quickly deal with these kinds of injuries, and I think it has benefited employees. Again, we're dealing with the most seriously injured employees here. But I think that the state labor movement in Minnesota would tell you, and I'm very confident of this, that it's a wonderful opportunity. And again, it also gives them a little control. It gives them the opportunity to make sure that the policies of the WCRA are in line with what they believe are important to injured employees. The experience has been very good. Insurer members, employees, employers have worked hand in hand for the benefit of the employees. And that's an important part. That's a good question. I mean, ultimately, what's this about? This is about employees. but it's about keeping your costs down at the same time. And I think that that is, has happened in Minnesota, and I think it could happen in Oregon as well, if done right.
And my second question that follows up on that is that you mentioned when you first started the program, it took 4 years for you to pay on your first claim.
Correct.
That's a long time. I expect you're a lot better than that now. So maybe you could comment on that.
Mr. Chair, Senator Walker, let me clarify. What I meant was it takes 4 years because if you're at a, even if you're at the low retention limit of 300,000 or 340 or whatever the retention limit might be, the injury occurs in 1979. Before that claim pays out $300,000 in medical and indemnity benefits, it's probably 4 years. I mean, it may not be, but it's unlikely. So it's not because it takes 4 years to pay out.
Mm-hmm.
It takes that long for the retention limit to be reached.
Okay.
The actual turnaround time for the WCRA from the time a claim is made till the time payment is made is an average of a day and a half. It's a day and a half it takes us to...
A day and a half.
Yeah, when I got there in 1987, it took 15 days. For all sorts of reasons, I challenged them, and we got it down to a day and a half. Literally, so we get a request in for reimbursement from the WCRA member, and within a day and a half, that check is either in the mail or in their electronic... their audit procedures... And we go back and do audits later on. But it was important, I believed at the time, to get this money to the policyholder member quickly. Funny story, when I got there and it was 15 days, I said, that's too long. And our finance people said, well, 15 days, though, but we get to float on all this stuff. We can keep. I said, well, wait a minute. Our job is not to, we're making money, but not because we're holding somebody else's money for an additional period of time. So it's a day and a half right now. Now, in some cases, a little longer, but the average is a day and a half. With 23 staff members.
Yeah.
You know, again, I know you're going to hear lots of testimony from others as to the theoretical pitfalls of the WCRA. And you know, we could argue theory all day long, but I would just ask you to look at reality. I would ask you if you're interested, not now, but come to Minnesota. I mean, I wouldn't suggest you come now. But
we're out of money, you can't drive.
Trust me, we don't have money either. In fact, I'm supposed to be in City Hall right now cutting the city's budget, so thank goodness for you saved me. I really appreciate the fact that I don't have to make those hard decisions. I can blame the mayor.
I'm done. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just paged through your sheet like this, and I'm showing roughly $542 million. And reserve, funded reserves on these few sheets, you said you have 920 outstanding. So this represents more than half of the people insured?
Sure. Mr. Chair, Senator Byer, yeah, probably. Well, not insured, but funded reserves. I mean, you've got a large national self-insurer. You've got the state fund in here, probably the two largest writers of comp in the state. So they account for a large share of it. You've got the state of Minnesota. You've got the others that are indicated in here. So, you know, the truth of the matter is we have, I don't know what, probably five of the largest insurers in Minnesota insure 80% of the market. You know, you've got State Fund, Liberty Mutual, Travelers, and maybe a couple of others. So that's it. There are lots of others who have a very small share. But you're right. That's probably the bulk of what you see here is the bulk of them. But the benefit here is those members that don't have any liability, and some of them never will. Some small self-insurers or large self-insurers are never going to see a single claim. They still get the money back.
Another question, Mr. Chair. On that note, how the premium? What is the premium based on? Is that percent of payroll? Is that, I mean,
it's percent, Mr. Chair, Senator Byer. It's for insurance companies. It's a percentage of their written premium in Minnesota. So if they write $1 million, let's say, if they have $1 million in premium, and they choose the retention limit, which the rate is, I can't remember offhand what they are, 3%. You multiply $1 million by 3%. For self-insurers, there has to be a calculation as to what they would pay in insurance premium if they were insured. So that calculation is made, and then the rate is applied to that premium. Self-insureds have the ability to reduce that by experience rating, and many of them are under, so they you figure the premium, apply the experience rating factor, and it's either higher or lower. But yeah, there has to be a calculation of what its self-insured premium would be if they were insured.
Okay.
Okay, and final question, Mr. Chair. What is your, I mean, basic workers' comp system in Minnesota look like? I mean, here in Oregon, we've got a, you know, a three-legged system, whatever. We've got the state fund, we've got self-insurance, we've got private insurers. I would say we have one of the best systems in the nation of how our general system works. Can you describe some of Minnesota's?
Mr. Chair, Senator Byer, I'm sure you have a better system than Minnesota. But Minnesota has actually had some struggles in the 80s and up until the mid-90s. There were lots of political fights over benefits, et cetera. But we, too, allow private. We allow self-insurers. We allow private insurance coverage. And our state fund exists as well. Our state fund was established in 1984. So I think there's some similarities to it. I think the benefit structure is comparable between the two states. We obviously have, I think, we have a little larger pool because we're a little larger state. Our population is about 5 million, and I think yours is somewhat less than that. But I think there's a lot of similarities between the two systems, I believe. You know, would this work in other states? I don't know. But in my analysis of Oregon, I think it's very comparable. And I understand you have a lot of Minnesotans here who moved here. So, you know, if you would like to adopt another Minnesota model, please be my guest.
Yeah, we may have your son out here.
Yeah, you may have my son out here. That's true. That's true.
Roger, you.
I'm no thanks.
Senator Mesker.
Thank you, Chair. You mentioned earlier at the beginning of your testimony that all the insured, self-insureds, including your state fund and private insurers, are required to use the WCIR. Is that right for reinsurance?
Mr. Chair, Senator Nelson, that Senator Metzger, excuse me.
It means butcher, so that's
Metzger.
Okay.
Metzger. Excuse me, well, talk about butcher. You want to try pronouncing my name?
No.
Yes. They all are required. It is a requirement to buy their reinsurance from us, not their insurance.
Right.
Their reinsurance from us. All right. Let me say it's not from us. I'm not there anymore. From them, from WCRA. It's hard after 14 years to sort of break away.
Right. And then the follow-up on that, then, of course, with each insurer, whether the state or the private insurers or the self-insured, I mean, the decision to buy reinsurance, I assume, is made from their own boards. In terms of, I mean, they could just reserve for their own future short and long tail or buy reinsurance. I mean, is there how is that determined? Is that by the individual insurer or self-insured in terms of how much reinsurance they want to buy from the WCRA? Or how's that?
Mr. Senator Metzger, every self-insured is required to have reinsurance in Minnesota. The Commissioner of Commerce doesn't want people to self-insure and not have the financial capacity to pay these large claims. So, number one, they're all required to. And the commissioner, in fact, does, in analyzing new applications, might require a small self-insured to be at the low retention limit because, you know, if you're, right, you're the mom-and-pop grocery store on the corner, do you really want to be at $1.4 million? You probably can't handle it. Right. But the decision is then made by every company as to what retention limit they want to choose. We've seen some go from the super to the low to the high, and they can change it every year. So, and those coverages, the claims that occur in the particular year is based on, the payments are based on what retention limit was in that year. So, for example, if we were today to get a claim from 1979, which actually still occurs at times, we'd go back to 1979, see what retention limit they're at, and apply that coverage at that time.
I'd like to follow up on that. And then you also mentioned that you had, you know, I think you said four or five major insurers and a lot of other smaller ones. Mm-hmm. And you have a state fund as well.
Correct.
Is that correct?
Correct.
Then do you have any idea in terms of, now we're talking about the underlying workers' comp now here, how large of a market is your state fund and how much are the private insurers and the self-insured? Do you know what that breakdown is?
Mr. Chair, Senator Metzger, I think the state fund, and, you know, don't quote me on this one, but I think it writes about 20 to 25% of the business in Minnesota. I think the market as a whole is probably in the written premiums. This is just insurance, not self-insurance. About $1 billion of premiums written. So if you add self-insurers onto there, I'd be guessing, but it's probably, I don't know, another $300-400 million. That I don't know for sure.
Okay.
But
sure. Then, on your state fund, since they're obviously in tandem with this as well, what effect, once you started the WCRA and you've had this, you know, long experience now with buying reinsurance, and obviously, at least from your, you know, numbers would seem to indicate that it has worked well in the reinsurance part of the portfolio. What what effect has that had prior to when you started this program versus to before, in terms of the ability of your state fund to maintain, you know, reserve levels and surplus and excess of reserves, you know, for long tail experience? Has this had an effect on their working capital in terms of what they've had to you know, retain as for their basic workers' comp experience?
Mr. Chair, Senator Metzger, yes. I mean, it's a positive impact. Remember, I don't remember what retention limit they're at, but essentially we're reserving for those injuries or those claims above the retention limit. So it does relieve them of sort of, it doesn't relieve them of liability because they're still paying it, but they then get reimbursement from us. They have the knowledge that any claim over X, whatever the retention limit is, covered by the WCRA. So it frees up capital. It allows them to write more business, and it keeps them financially viable, I believe. And it has been Pat Johnson, who's the president of our state fund, is one of the staunchest advocates. She sits on the board of the WCRA. And I would suggest that if you were to do this, given your state fund's size, that you might. My recommendation, and you're going to do what you want to do, would be to put them on the board. I think it's important that those large insurers be on the board, the ones who benefit. So I think it has had, in fact, I would say absolutely has had a positive impact on the state fund's ability to be financially viable and continue business. In fact, some years ago, because of really bad investment policy, our state fund became insolvent. As a result of that, the WCRA's surplus that were made prior to that essentially got them back to a position where they are now, I think, the premier writer of work comp in Minnesota. Had it not been for the WCRA, our state fund would have had to have been bailed out by our state legislature. And rather than that, it was the WCRA's surplus distributions that. Now, would that happen here? Obviously, every situation is different. But our real-life history and experience has been that it has had the impact of keeping our work comp market in Minnesota somewhat fluid and flexible, allowing insurers to write in Minnesota. Those that, you know, that choose to. Work comp's a tough business, and more are getting out of it. But Minnesota doesn't seem to be a shortage. Our assigned risk plan, for example, is way down. I don't know what you have here. Our assigned risk plan is for those insurers, for those policyholders, employers who, for whatever reason, can't get in the private set market. It's way down. It's almost non-existent in Minnesota now.
Can I ask one final question, Mr. Chair? And final, and I know this is pretty well by prima facie on face, but if you, in fact you didn't, let's say you weren't buying much reinsurance, whether you're a self-insured or a company, and you're using your retention on a self-insured or your retained earnings to meet your obligations, that if you had access to reasonably priced reinsurance, but decided not to do that, then obviously you would have to retain more capital to meet those obligations if you decided not to go that route. I know they can't do that in your state, but that would seem to go without saying that those numbers would have to be retained at a much larger level.
Mr. Chair, Senator Metzger, that's correct. And ultimately, if you had a large claim that you couldn't handle, it's not inconceivable that employer could go out of business, could be bank, and couldn't pay its claim, which at least in Minnesota would then throw it into our uninsured fund pool, which is then assessed to everybody else in Minnesota. So again, I don't know if that's what you have here. But this is an effort to keep self-insurers solvent and allow the benefits that are due to employees to be available when they're to be paid.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. I think in your first statement you said something about your oversight is the legislature. That's kind of the, and I mean, a private insurance company would have an insurance commissioner or something to regulate them. How does that,
Mr. Chair? And in a sense, it's everyone, because in Minnesota, it's the commissioner who gets to make a few of the appointments to the board. The Commissioner of Labor and Industry, and I know it's different here, but our Commissioner of Labor and Industry gets to appoint the two labor members, gets to appoint the two employer members, and the public member. So the 13 members, five are appointed by the Commissioner of Labor and Industry. When I say legislative oversight, because the WCRA is a legislative-created entity, the WCRA on a regular basis appears before the legislature, We answer questions. By the way, our records are completely public. We have supplied all sorts of information to legislatures or the insurance department or the actuaries. And, you know, we've been audited by, we have audits from private auditing firms as well as the state. All our information is public, other than I can't tell you the names of some of these companies, but the financial information. So the legislature has some oversight simply because they created us. They could do away with us. And we have been successful in providing all sorts of information, and I think to their satisfaction, because after 24 years, the WCRA is still around despite numerous and repeated attempts to convince legislators on both sides of the aisle. We had three sides for a while there with our governor, but we're back to two.
Insure wrestling match.
Yeah, I'm sure you didn't. I'm sure none of you heard about our former governor, so we won't go into that. But it gives you as legislators the opportunity to see what's happening in the work comp market as well. It is a window to the work comp situation, not just the reinsurance, but the insurance situation in general, because we provide all sorts of information from Dollar One that's available. So rather than depending on industry groups, for example, to give you information, you would call whoever at this entity and say, you know, we'd like to talk to you, come and testify, bring us what you have, or however you do it. So you'd have the opportunity to do that. So I think there is oversight.
Do you have to keep a certain amount in reserve? Is there any particular...
Mr. Chair, we have to keep enough to pay future claims. We have to be fully funded. We do that in a number of ways. There was an actuary on staff, and then every 3 years, 2 to 3 years, we hire an independent actuarial firm to do a complete analysis of our reserves. And up to this point, they have indicated we are fully funded. So we believe we are, or they believe they are. Our actuary, I think, is very good. She came from St. Paul Companies. But we get that kind of analysis every 2 to 3 years. It costs us money, but, you know, these actuaries aren't cheap. You know, $400 an hour, you can imagine what it costs for them to go through all these numbers. But we've gotten a clean bill of health every year since 1979.
$400,
that's kind of what a
court
report is.
Oh, no. Why? Maybe a lawyer.
Okay, any further questions? Jay, thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you for the opportunity.
Very good, and really appreciate your coming out.
I appreciate my coming out, too. It's, as I said, it's a lot warmer here than it is in Minnesota. So thank you very much. And any questions, please feel free to contact me.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you. Very good. We have a couple other folks signed up. Paul Cosgrove and Brad Cady. Is that right? So when do you have to fly back?
Well, tomorrow, but I might find a way not to go back.
The way the Midwest is looking, you may not have to.
Maybe I'll join my son out here.
Yeah. Well, is there a direct flight back to Minnesota?
Yeah, there is, fortunately. Yeah,
we're waiting for the technology to switch over. For the record, Paul Cosgrove representing the Reinsurance Association of America, and with me is Brad Cading from the Reinsurance Association of America, Senior Vice President. And we're not going to do high tech. We're going to do paper, and paper is being passed out to you. In fact, Mr. Cading has a very nice slideshow, but for a variety of technological reasons, at the beginning of this hearing, we're not going to try to switch computers at the moment. One of the things that Mr. Cading is going to do, and he'll be available to answer questions, obviously, that you may have, is to sort of discuss the other side of the story. And there are people both outside of Minnesota and within Minnesota who have some concerns and different views about how the WCRA has been working and will work in the future. The two things that you're being handed out, I think Mr. Cading is going to work off of the larger packet, which is copies of what would have been slides up on the screen, and I'll let him, if it's all right, Mr. Chair, take it from here.
Sorry.
We'll be
Brad,
glad to answer.
Please introduce yourself and welcome.
Great, thank you. I hope the microphone is on, and I'm Brad Cading with the Reinsurance Association of America. After hearing Jay's presentation, I think I'm the person who's here to tell you that there's no such thing as a free lunch. So I hope I have that opportunity and that I have at the time. I realize we're probably over the allotted committee time at this point, but I'd be happy to come back if we need to talk more. What I want to begin with, is, and again, I represent reinsurance companies. I have 20 U.S.-based property and casualty reinsurance companies within the membership and 8 reinsurance brokers within the membership. What I'd like to start with is a quote with regard to the WCRA. There's currently no regulatory oversight for safety and soundness of the WCRA. What constitutes adequate loss reserves and adequate surplus for the protection of injured workers, employers, insurers, and the efficiency of the market? The regulatory authority and framework that would normally be found in statute or rule is non-existent. Now, you may think that's a quote from me, but actually that's a quote from the Minnesota Insurance Regulator, the Minnesota Commissioner of Commerce in 1999, in a quote to a legislative hearing that was in investigating the practices and the operation and the future of the Workers' Compensation Reinsurance Association of Minnesota. I think that goes to illustrate a number of important points. First of all, the WCRA is not regulated as an insurance company. It does not meet the standards, be they accounting, loss reserving, investment, adequate surplus and capital. It does not meet any of those standards, nor is it subject to any of those standards that would be applied to an insurance company and for me, to my reinsurance company members, all of which have licenses to write business in Minnesota and all of which must be regulated as insurance companies in Minnesota in order for them to do business in that market. The WCRA, after all, is a monopoly. It's a monopoly created by statute. It is a creature of state law. It operates by its own rules and those minimal rules that are imposed by it by state law. It was given the power to tax, and that would be the assessment authority if funds are insufficient, if business mistakes are made, be they in equity, investment, asset risk mistakes, or actuarial forecasting mistakes. Then the mistakes in terms of the funds that are needed to pay claims are assessed against the future employers in the state. Ultimately, that is how that monopoly is able to cover the finances when there is a financial hole. And the WCRA probably has unfunded liabilities. The WCRA uses a discount rate which would be prohibited by law for any commercial insurer or reinsurer to use. It's approximately an 8% and recently reduced to 7.5% discount rate.
If I could interrupt, Mr. Keating, for a minute, that 8%, of course, here has a special significance in this state in another context. What that means is the anticipation that those current reserves will be sufficient to pay estimated claims is assuming there's an 8% return from here throughout the life of the plan. That's almost double what an insurance company would be allowed to assume in terms of rate of return in that sense.
The WCRA is basically making a bet today that its $4 billion in obligations for future claims will be financed by the $1 billion in assets on hand, and that may or may not be true. Ultimately, time will tell. And that's the bet that is made with the WCRA, and that is the bet that employers and insurers face with regard to future claims obligations that come due. There are a couple tests that are probably relevant with this regard. The WCRA really operates today with a ratio of 40 to 1 with regard to reserves to current surplus. The private insurers and reinsurers in the United States, according to state regulatory law and according to the standards imposed by private rating agencies, operate with less than a 2 to 1 reserve to surplus ratio. So the leverage in the WCRA is 40 to 1, which is a significant difference than that which is applied to the private insurers and reinsurers at 2 to 1. It really is an illustration that there's not a margin for error. After all, the WCRA today gives back its surplus as it's accumulated, so it really doesn't have a cash cushion to cover material mistakes that are made in the forecasting of reserves. And again, as Jay properly noted, this is a long tail line of business, often estimated at 40 years for workers' compensation reinsurance before you know ultimately. So today in 2003, I will know in 2043 what ultimately the cost was of the workers' compensation reinsurance business that I wrote today. It is an incredibly long tail, which means that when a mistake is made, the results or the effects of that mistake are magnified over time and come due at some point in the future. The WCRA would be insolvent if it was considered an insurance company. There certainly is no doubt with regard to that based on the reserve to surplus ratio and the fact that it gives away its surplus. So again, it's under a statutory mandate, I believe, at this time to basically dividend back to its customers surplus funds as they materialize. But let me talk about the benefits of private sector coverage, which are really more choices of products, more flexibility in managing your risk, a greater opportunity to have your prices match your actual loss experience, and then the benefits of competition. And ultimately, we are in a hard market, but in the grand American tradition, what happens when you don't like your insurance company is you create your own insurance company. And indeed, that's the grand American tradition, and that's what a number of entities have done with regard to workers' compensation excess cover. The League of Cities on a countrywide basis is a good example. It has its own reinsurance company called National League of Cities Mutual Reinsurance Company, which really serves to reinsure the leagues of cities across the country. It's found that that's an advantageous way to do business and to provide a benefit to the members of those leagues. The Farm Bureaus operate in a similar fashion. The Farm Bureau insurance companies have created their own reinsurance company. So again, and when you have hard market conditions like you have today, those are often the incentives for which you explore alternatives, which may be formation of your own insurer or formation of your own reinsurance company. What happens in monopoly markets like the Minnesota market, where there's a mandate to buy a specific product, is that you have a subsidy that's created. You have classes of employers that end up subsidizing other classes of employers in that market. After all, that is the part of the intent of the Minnesota statute, is to have an evening out of the experience of the employers in that market. So that means that less credit is given to those employers with good safety records, less credit than would otherwise be given in the private market. It's likely that the largest employers subsidize the smallest employers. The subsidies can work out in different ways, but that would be a likely case of how it would work. And in the long run, the subsidies limit the business's ability to compete. It's very difficult to return from a monopoly market to a private market. And one of the reasons it's very difficult to unwind a monopoly market once it's created is because of the subsidies that are then inherent in the subsidies that are left in the system, which have created a class of employer who is paying more than they otherwise should be paying. By contrast, if an insurer tries to charge a customer more than that customer's their customers' experience and the similar class of employer experience would justify, what happens is a new insurer will come along and undercut that price and take the business away. So the private insurance market is really carnivorous in that sense, is that if somebody tries to recover, and in the case of the current market conditions, I think people have argued that people are trying to recover in Oregon losses on a countrywide basis. Obviously, in Oregon, you have insurers that don't operate on a countrywide basis. So they are the insurers that if one of their competitors tries to get back some money by overcharging Oregon employers based on nationwide loss experience, they will lose that business. They will lose that business to the Oregon insurers or to the startup insurers or to the regional insurers that have not priced that into their premium. Fundamentally, creation of a reinsurance monopoly is completely inconsistent with the operation of the three-way system in Oregon. Three-way, after all, fundamentally is about choice. It's a choice of using an insured market, a self-insured market, or it's a choice not to reinsure. It's a choice to use a state fund. The WCRA approach, if tried in Oregon, would basically eliminate that choice. It locks Oregon employers into a defined product that is established in law and a defined retention, a choice of three retentions, arguably, from the Minnesota law. And it prevents them from using multiple line risk management programs, which many employers and many insurers do when they buy reinsurance. It prevents them from using regional risk management programs or from using national risk management programs. The effect of the government mandate, then, is to eliminate those multiple choices, those choices of products, those choices of insurers, those choices of how to insure or how to reinsure. Sure. The power to tax is a power that we've talked about a little bit, but again, if business mistakes are made in the reinsurance monopoly operation, those business mistakes really fall on the future employers in the Oregon market to make up the unfunded liabilities or to cover other mistakes from asset risk that may be involved in the pricing of the product. It's important to understand that another distinction between the reinsurance monopoly and private insurers is the large degree to which the reinsurance monopoly is invested in the stock market. The Minnesota reinsurance monopoly has 60% of its assets, according to its 2001 report, in the stock market. Again, that would be against the law for an insurance company or a reinsurance company under most state statutes. Most insurance companies and reinsurers have between 10 and 25% of their assets invested in the stock market. So the WCRA is heavily exposed to asset risk from decline in equity portfolios. And again, that started to be reflected in the 2001 annual statement, where they reported an operating loss relating to two factors. One, to a loss in equity investments, but also, two, to a change in the discount rate, which caused them to boost their reserves based on a reflection on that in the future there'd be a lower investment return that would otherwise be applicable.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Could you give me those numbers again? You said the WCRA is 60% of its assets in stocks. Private insurances are real. Regulated to how much?
Between 10 and 25%. Again, it's a function of state law in terms of what an insurance company is allowed to invest in equities, but the rule of thumb would be between 10 and 25%. Jay referred to an actuarial study that was done that compared and contrasted rates charged by the Minnesota monopoly to private insurer rates. That actuarial study was really pretty thoroughly discredited by the Commissioner of Commerce again back in 1999. The summary of the Commissioner's quote was, in the end, with regard to the Milliman study, a monopolistic seller of a product sponsored a study of itself with no meaningful participation by either the buyers of that product or by the other potential sellers. It is not surprising that the study's conclusion implies that the monopoly is the best means of delivering the product. The rebuttal report, which is written by the Tillinghast Towers Perrin consulting firm at the direction of the Minnesota Department of Commerce, found that the private sector rates were roughly comparable to the Minnesota WCRA rates. The exceptions to those rates, though, were for the lack of any tax cost. And for some classes of employers, the private sector rates were 10% to 20% higher. What the Tillinghast report found was that the private market did a much better job of differentiating rates for an employer or an insurance company based on its actual loss experience. The private sector competitors, again, were better at finding out who was a better risk and then offering them a better price that matched that risk in the market. So again, it's not a uniform conclusion with regard to what the rates should be and what the rate comparison would be between the private market. What probably would happen is that some employers pay more and some employers pay less. That's really the conclusion of the Tillinghast study. But again, it did serve to discredit the Milliman study and to point out the self-interest that was inherent in the study that was then commissioned by the WCRA. Again, the private market allows you a multitude of choices. In the current hard market, there are choices that are available to people who have adverse experience in the current market. The private market avoids the potential for new taxes on employers. Again, the Minnesota Commerce Commissioner likened the WCRA to really the Social Security system, that it's a pay-as-you-go basis, with the potential that future employers pay the costs of those who are in the insured market today. The current market does not have the unfunded liabilities that may exist within the WCRA based on business mistakes and either equity risk or based on discount factors that prove to be too high over the long haul, and based on important changes in the work comp claim system that are including medical price inflation and the severity of claims. The excess layer in which we're talking about is a layer in which there's greater volatility in claims experience because fewer injuries end up in these excess layers. Therefore, the pool of experience is more difficult to draw judgments from. And if there's a mistake in the valuation of the future cost of the medical inflation costs, then those mistakes are compounded in the excess claims when those true costs are ultimately known. Again, the current market system creates economic incentives to avoid cross-subsidies in the market. The Minnesota monopoly, by contrast, creates incentives for cross-subsidies in the market. And the effect of an Oregon reinsurance monopoly would be to concentrate catastrophe risk from earthquake or volcanic eruption within the state rather than to have the catastrophe risk distributed globally, if not only nationally, but more likely globally, through the use of private insurance and reinsurance mechanisms. Paul, please supplement these remarks as you wish.
I'd be happy, and as would Brad, to answer any questions if the committee has any.
Senator Meyer.
Yes. Now, you said Oregon employers have a choice that if they don't like what's on the market, they could use Oregon-only reinsurance companies. Do you know if there are any Oregon-only reinsurance companies?
Go ahead.
Oregon-only insurance companies, really...
Reinsurance. We're talking about reinsurance here.
Well, we're talking about both. They've used the term in the Minnesota law of reinsurance, but it's really the same thing as excess insurance or reinsurance. Reinsurance is sold to an insurance company. Excess cover is sold to a non-insurance company. So there are competitors in this market that are Oregon-only that are able to meet the needs of this market.
There are only Oregon-only or regionally-only excess companies who are available to self-insureds who wouldn't have had any exposure, for example, to New York or other kinds of events like that. Yes.
Okay, so there are some companies. You know anything off the top of your head?
I was talking to the insurance division. We talked about 30 different companies. I couldn't tell you which ones are which, but I can get that answered for you, Senator.
Thank you. One more, Mr. Chair. And you might not know the answer to this, but you also said that private industry gives the insurance or the self-insured employers the choice of whether or not to buy insurance if they can't afford it. In Oregon, don't we require our self-insureds to reinsure their liabilities?
My understanding, Senator, Mr. Chairman, Senator Beyer, is that in Oregon, the Workers' Compensation Department has a whole lot of restrictions it puts on self-insured employers, and that is one of them, although that the level of excess insurance may differ between different self-insureds in different financial situations. So I think you're correct. I hesitate to say this for certain, and there may be someone from the insurance division who could correct me, but I think at least nearly all, if not all, self-insured employers must buy excess insurance. I believe you're correct.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, I have a question. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Gentlemen, do you know, I asked the question about the rapidity of paying their claims, day and a half, time period to pay claims. Do you know what the standard in Oregon is?
In the commercial reinsurance market, with regard to payment of a catastrophe loss, the standard is next day, 2 day, 3 day turnaround time on payments. It's understood that it's essential for a catastrophe loss to be paid fairly quickly once it's reported to you. With regard to claims that have been reported and are maturing and developing, and ongoing payments may be made, there certainly are standards. I'm just not aware of what the standard is.
The reason I ask that question is because I get complaints from people in the workers' compensation system who go a month, 2 months, 3 months without getting any payment of any kind, and they're supposed to survive on that.
Well, again, please understand, Senator, that in this issue we are talking about claims at a level which is pretty much removed from the consumer claim. Payment. The claim payment situation you're describing is really one where either the self-insured employer or its third-party administrator is paying claims, or the insurance company is paying claims. The WCRA, or the reinsurance monopoly concept, would be really operating as a reimbursement payment layer, reimbursing the self-insured employer for funds it's already paid, or reimbursing the insurance company for funds it's already paid. So it's removed from that direct contact with the injured worker that you're describing.
Well, the question then, I asked that question also, our fellow from Minnesota, I'm afraid to pronounce the last name because I'm not very good at that. Beninov. Beninov? Sorry? I didn't pronounce Minnesota correctly.
with a Minnesota accent.
Yeah. The other thing I asked him was how workers actually felt and their employees felt with the system, and he said that they were very happy with the system. And I knew it was all too good to be true, and you were going to come up. I didn't know who was coming up next to burst the bubble, but I missed part of your presentation, but why are people unhappy? Why are you telling me there's people unhappy with the system?
Fundamentally, because in Minnesota there's no choice.
That's it.
So insurers and self-insured employers prefer, as they do in the other states in which they do business, they prefer to have the choice of insurance company, the choice of product type, the choice to bundle products, the choice to buy only a truly very high layer of protection as opposed to the choices offered in Minnesota law. They're sort of boxed in. They're boxed into a system that was designed because it had to be that way to meet the needs of a certain segment of the population, but it doesn't have to be that way, nor does it necessarily benefit all the people in the system. Again, that's part of the public policy decision you will ultimately make. Do you want to really let the market set the terms and conditions from which coverage is provided, or do you conversely want to set some statutory standard that limits and really restrains innovation, with the trade-off being you have met the needs of a certain market segment in a way that otherwise would not have been met?
Mm-hmm. Okay. Thank you.
Can you just talk a little bit about the reserve situation and the unfunded liability? Testimony before indicates that they don't feel there's any problem with unfunded liability. You seem to indicate there is.
Well, Jay left out in his presentation $1 billion in what's called the unfunded layer, which according to page 18 of the financial statement, there's $1 billion in liabilities here in this unfunded layer, which brings to a total liability $4 billion on a non-discounted basis. I've talked to two actuaries with regard to their review of the discount rate used in the Minnesota monopoly, and their views would be it's an overly generous discount rate, and that one view was that there's about a $500 to $600 million unfunded liability that eventually will develop within the reinsurance monopoly.
If I can just add to that, the unfunded layer, we've talked about this monopoly system picks up at three different levels. It also stops at a particular level, and there is a level if a claim exceeds that that is unfunded. That's a second method that the statute gives them to assess employers if any one claim or any number of claims in and of themselves hit beyond that level. There's an assessment mechanism. Even if the fund is otherwise solvent, that's unfunded, and they assess to cover those very large claims. I'm not sure I can say what that exact level is. I think Brad can.
I think it's just under $7 million is where the unfunded liability. So, again, that's an example where it's understood that the employers will be assessed on a future basis for all claims in that level. There's not an attempt made to build in a rate today to cover that future loss, but there's an understanding that there will be future losses in that area. Again, if I could go back to earthquake and volcanic risk, I hope I don't want to overemphasize this point. But again, as Jay mentioned, that you could operate the system on a cash flow basis in the early years because all the claims tails were going to be fairly long, and after all, only after 4 years of operation, the first claim penetrated the layer in which they had an obligation. That would not be true in the case of an earthquake next year in Oregon. In the case of an earthquake next year in Oregon, you have lots of claims that all of a sudden penetrate the retention limits and the reinsurance monopoly. So that's one of the issues that's different from Minnesota to Oregon. There are other issues that are different as well, but that's one example. It's the catastrophe risk that exists here that doesn't exist in Minnesota, which means you would have to operate that differently. Again, the Commissioner of Commerce in 1999 noted that after 20 years of operation, the Minnesota WCRA had only paid out on 5% of its ultimate obligations. So that's the evidence, again, as to what we talk about when we talk about the long tail, that the future obligations of the WCRA are tremendous, just as because it's an excess in a reinsurance operation. The future obligations are tremendous. They've dividended away the money that otherwise would be there for the margin of error. And they have to dividend away the money that would otherwise be there for the margin of error. So if there is a mistake, then those costs have to be passed on to future employers in the market.
have tidal waves in Minnesota? What do you thought the sound was?
No.
Only from Lake Superior.
Tornadoes. They have tornadoes and hailstorms, summer storms. Senator Walker.
Thank you. I was going through my notes, and Mr. Beninov had a question. Well, he had a statement, if I got it correctly. If insurers made money in the 90s, why wasn't it turned over to policyholders? What happened to it?
Thank you for asking. We're both ready.
And I see your poison ready. And you tracked me down in the Capitol a couple days ago to talk to me about that. So why don't you share it with the rest of us?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Walker, one small part of that is a reflection in one of the pieces of testimony that was given last week by the woman from Port Portland, and I think accurately so, but it's not just for the port. It was for a number of insurers. The private insurance market reduced rates pretty significantly in a number of years in the 90s as well. A reflection of the opposite of a hard market, a soft market. So in fact, when those gains were being made in the investment side, and when there was a great deal of competition amongst carriers to get new business, there were rate reductions, not lesser increases, but real reductions made. And the Port of Portland witness's testimony reflects that they had 20% reductions in 1 or 2 years in that very same period of time.
Yeah, I mean, there really has been a significant price war in insurance and reinsurance from 1995 through 2000. That manifested itself to all those buyers of excess insurance or reinsurance in either premiums that did not grow or in actual reductions as competitors undercut each other to take the business away. Soft markets like those years always last longer than hard markets. And effectively, we are two-thirds of the way through, probably, the current hard market, which started in early 2001. The reinsurance renewal information for January 2003 shows declines in reinsurance costs on property catastrophe cover. It shows abundant and plentiful reinsurance supply for workers' compensation insurance markets and self-insured markets. And when there's abundant capacity, the next step is that people start undercutting each other in price. And again, as I talked about the ability to, when you don't like your insurance company, you start your own insurance company. That happens every time there's a hard market or a market dislocation. And indeed, that happened at the end of 2001. There were 8 new reinsurance companies formed, each with $1 billion of new capital. Those 8 new reinsurance companies are really the people in the market today that will prevent other reinsurance companies from going to Oregon and saying, you have to pay more because of my losses in New York City. The effect of the new entrants into the market is to ensure that no one can charge you more than otherwise is your relative cost of providing a risk transfer product. And that's what goes on in the system, and that's what's gone on today because it's easy to form and easy to enter the reinsurance market.
Questions?
No, we answered my question. Thank you.
Yeah. Well, I just would have one, and I'm sorry, I had to step out for a few moments, but when you talked about availability and going to the private market and being able to have access to this, one of the things that we heard, in fact, some of the people in the audience today from our hearing a week ago, is that they have been unable to even get reinsurance in some of their businesses. So, I mean, this is the private quote market working, and yet it's been unavailable. So, so in some cases, that's only theoretical, even in the competitive market.
If I could thank you for the question again, and let me try to respond. Again, there certainly are warts in the capitalistic system. No doubt about it. But it's like the Winston Churchill quote on democracy. This is a terrible form of government, but show me a better one. That really is the analog to the capitalistic system. Yes, there are times when things are hard for people. There are times when people are unhappy about the choices that they offered in the market. But those times don't last very long. And again, the past experience is that 18 months into a hard market, things start to change. And once they start to change, they can change fairly rapidly. Again, we'll see. But the 2003 reinsurance renewal information, as reported by the reinsurance brokers and as published in the insurance industry trade press and as published by analysts like Morgan Stanley, are that reinsurance market capacity is abundant and plentiful.
I have one more question.
Sure.
Just one final question then. Let's take the hybrid approach. You know, I'm just curious as to how you would feel about that. As we've been looking at the WCRA, which is mandated to all insureds and self-insureds and insurance companies in Minnesota, what would your response be in terms of the monopoly issue and in terms of the competitive market if, in fact, the reinsurer was similar to the WCRA but was not mandatory but had all the other same powers and abilities and benefits the WCRA has, but was not mandated to use that only? How would you feel that of a WCRA competitor in the reinsurance market on an unmandated form?
We welcome all competitors that play by the same rules that we play. So if there's a competitor that you create, and if you require that competitor to abide by insurance company regulation in Oregon, and if it pays taxes like we pay taxes, then that seems to be a level playing field that you would maintain.
Would that then also then require, you know, that they pay in to the high-risk pool and all those other things that you would have to do? Would that all be part of that same analysis?
We're really looking for a level playing field in terms of competitors. I mean, again, that's what this is all about, is that we think the private market provides better choices over the long run and better products that meet Oregon needs better. If you want to test that by creating a competitive excess insurer, competitive excess insurer, reinsurer in this market, then okay, but please make sure that it's required to compete under the same regulatory standards and the same tax laws as we're required to do.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Any further questions? Thank you, gentlemen, very much.
Mr.
Really do appreciate that.
Thank you very much.
Stick around. Jay, do you want to come back up and just say anything? Is there a rebuttal? This is a court hearing here.
I like it.
This is.
I don't have another.
You're the plaintiff, I guess.
Mr. Chair, thank you. I'll just take a couple minutes. You know, you heard a lot, and frankly, this comes down to dueling actuaries. The same Tillinghouse that indicated one thing has also on many occasions indicated, in fact, the WCRA is adequately reserved. The WCRA rates are approved by the commissioner in the state of Minnesota. Our discount rate is approved by the commissioner in the state of Minnesota. Our investment policy is approved by the commissioner of the state of Minnesota. So, you know, all these indications that we're unregulated simply are not true. The commissioner in 1999, frankly, had some, and I'll be real honest, some political axe to grind with the WCRA. His report has gone absolutely nowhere. The Speaker of the House in Minnesota, who is a conservative Republican, has said over his dead body the WCRA will be abolished. The Democrats have indicated when pigs fly, that was a quote, the WCRA will be abolished. So, no, is there a pig farmer on this? We do have risks in Minnesota. We have tornado and blizzard. We have all sorts of risks. So, you know, we could sit here and, we can bore you with actuaries and analysis and theory. I simply ask you to look at real life, almost 25 years of history of WCRA experience in Minnesota. The tail is about 40 years, so we're well into the tails, and yet we are not underfunded. One quick comment on the unfunded liability. It is true. The Minnesota WCRA charges premiums up to a certain amount. And the reason that is because there was the feeling at the time the legislature was that there are so few risks that ever exceed that amount that to charge premiums on that is much too conservative. It'll never get there. In 25 years, the WCRA this year, for the first time, will pay in excess of the unfunded liability. Now, let me explain to you what that means. That means there's one claim that will finally exceed that unfunded liability, and it only is going to cost a few thousand dollars because that individual is only going to get, you know, indemnity benefits of whatever it is, $40,000, let's say. And that is then, in fact, spread out among all the members of WCRA. The bottom line is you can barely see that assessment on the system because it's one employee exceeding it after 25 years. Now, it's true, one day that employee will not be there anymore, that'll drop off. There may be others, but the analysis of the WCRA is that the next unfunded liability is about 5 years away. So, you know, it's true, you as a legislature have to decide, do you really believe that many claims are going to exceed that incredibly high limit? And if you do, then you could, you know, you can do this differently. You could have a higher unfunded liability or premium, in terms, you could do all sorts of things here. In terms of the retention limits, it's true Minnesota has three in statute. I would, given the fact that I ran the WCRA for a number of years, I would suggest that it not be put in statute. I would suggest that the board have the authority to set what the retention limits are to meet the needs of Oregon employers. When I drafted the 1979 statute, I made a mistake. I shouldn't have put it in statute, but so I did. So I learned. So there are things you can do to certainly address 90% of what I think has been you've heard, and so it's a question of whether or not you want to believe sort of theory. Again, yes, we all have self-interest. Our Reinsurance Association of America is here to promote its self-interest, and they would like to continue doing business. Your role, I believe, as a legislator myself, is to see what's best for for Oregon employers and employees. And if your role is to better the business climate for reinsurance companies, well, you can certainly do that. But my perspective is it's Oregon employers and employees generally. And look at the facts. Don't worry about theory.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
I think we should let Mr. Beninov in on the little joke. Last session, it was a Republican senator who said, when pigs fly, who's going to vote for a tax? So,
well, can I retract my statement? Then,
thank you. Sure. Wait a second.
While you're there, we heard from the reinsurers. It's interesting. You talked about your workers' comp or providers, like Liberty and Truck Travelers and the state, and all that. And I know it's probably not really fair to ask you to characterize, but what has been, in your experience since you ran the WCRA, the feeling of the private insurance market, workers' comp insurance market, for having reinsurance opportunities from the WCRA for their own portfolio?
Mr. Chair, Senator Metzger, it's a positive. I think generally it's positive, though I would be lying if I told you every insurance company in Minnesota doing business thought this was a great thing. For some of them, the difference between what they would buy reinsurance for in the private market, which I still believe is more expensive, versus what they'd get WCRA, a few million dollars, $5-10 million here, million here, million there, pretty soon you're talking about real money. But it's not that important to them. They just as soon sort of go out in the private market, maybe pay 50%, 30%, 20% more. But for all sorts of reasons, it's not an issue for them. For the local or the regional insurers, such as our state fund and their other smaller ones, I think they believe this has been a benefit. So, I would argue it's mixed. But our role in Minnesota has never been to make the business climate for the reinsurers better. It's to make the business climate for the employers better. And that's what we look at. Again, I said it before, I'll say it again. There have been many, and Brad and I are old friends. We've seen them on numerous occasions at the Minnesota legislature, and we've had Republican governors, Democratic governors, Independent Party governors. And it's still there after 25 years. So look at what's happened, not what people are indicating might in fact happen. What has happened?
I appreciate that.
Thank you.
And thank you, Jay.
Thank
you, Brad. I appreciate you folks coming from great distances to those things. And I know we could probably continue talking. Point counterpoint has been very interesting, and it's a very good committee, and I really do appreciate that. We're about 5 minutes out, so there's no bill introduced on this, and this is informational hearings, and what I'd like to do is get the folks that are representing each side of this to continue to sit down and work together, see if there's something we can do. I think there's points on both sides, so it's something we need to look at and to be open-minded about. So really appreciate it. Any other comment from the committee? Okay, we'll declare the committee adjourned.